We have a problem with love. Consider for a moment for yourself how that is a true thing to say. We have a problem with love. When I told my wife that the first line of my sermon was going to be, "We have a problem with love," she said, "Yes, we think it's all about chocolate hearts." Not that there's anything wrong with chocolate hearts, but love is not all about chocolate hearts. We have a problem with love. We have lots of problems with love. We are too comfortable with love meaning almost anything and thus almost nothing at all. We are too comfortable understanding love as a feeling and thinking this weekend, as we are, of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We are too comfortable thinking of beloved community as simple sentimentalism. We use the word love in so many ways, and I wonder if it isn't because we are a little intimidated by what love can mean. The writer Bell Hooks observed that undoubtedly many of us are comfortable with the notion that love can mean anything to anybody precisely because when we define it with precision and clarity, it brings us face to face with our lacks, a terrible alienation. Hooks believes that an overwhelming majority of us come from dysfunctional families, families where one is shamed or abused and at the same time told that one is loved. Hooks says that she grew up in a family in which, quote, aggressive shaming and verbal humiliation coexisted with lots of affection and care. Her family experience wasn't all bad. As dysfunctional as it was also a setting in which affection, delight, and care were present. We often think of love as the experience of affection or satisfaction or comfort. Hooks notes that affection is only one ingredient of love. To truly love, we must learn to mix various ingredients: care, affection, recognition, respect, commitment and trust, as well as open and honest communication. Hooks was dissatisfied by the definitions and lack of definitions she could find for the word love until she read the definition that M. Scott Peck gives in his book, The Road Less Traveled. Peck defines love as the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. Given that definition, Bell Hooks admits that applying Peck's definition of love to my childhood experience in my household of origin, I could not honestly describe it as loving. Hooks suspects that for most folks, it's just too threatening to embrace a definition of love that would no longer enable us to see love as present in our families. Maybe Peck's definition feels like a tall order. However we might pshaw at spiritual growth, nurturing that growth in oneself or another seems like a good thing. It's certainly something that members of a religious community should spend some time doing. But I don't find this definition of love to be sufficient. It feels a little bit too much just about individuals. Maybe that's not a problem. Love is certainly a good thing to have present in the relationship of individuals with one another. But something tells me, maybe it's my intuition that tells me, maybe it's that little voice that's telling me, love is bigger than that. When the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. tells the story of how he arrived at his commitment to nonviolence, he talks about the various philosophers and theologians that he read. By the time he went to college, King was already interested in social change and civil rights. He grew up in the Jim Crow South, after all, and had more than enough experience to tell him that things needed to change. When he got to college, and as he went through his seminary studies and worked towards a doctoral degree, he was looking for a method that might effectively make for the kind of change he could feel was necessary. He was in school and an intellectual, and he read a lot, but without much satisfaction. At one point in the early 1950s, he says, I had almost despaired of the power of love to solve social problems. And then, after hearing a sermon by the president of Howard University, who at the time was Dr. Mordecai Johnson, King was introduced to the teachings of Mahatma Gandhi. King says, like most people, I had heard of Gandhi, but I had never studied him seriously. As I read, I became deeply fascinated by his campaigns of nonviolent resistance. I was particularly moved by the Salt March to the Sea and his numerous fasts. The whole concept of satyagraha was profoundly significant to me. Satya is truth, which equals love, and agraha is force. Satyagraha, therefore, means truth force or love force. As I delved deeper into the philosophy of Gandhi, my skepticism concerning the power of love gradually diminished, and I came to see for the first time its potency in the area of social reform. Prior to reading Gandhi, I had about concluded that the ethics of Jesus were only effective in individual relationships. The turn-the-other-cheek philosophy and the love-your-enemies philosophy were only valid, I felt, when individuals were in conflict with other individuals. When racial groups and nations were in conflict, a more realistic approach seemed necessary. But after reading Gandhi, I saw how utterly mistaken I was. King says, Gandhi was probably the first person in history to lift the love ethic of Jesus above mere interaction between individuals to a powerful and effective social force on a large scale. Love for Gandhi was a potent instrument for social and collective transformation, and it was in this Gandhian emphasis on love and nonviolence that I discovered the method for social reform that I had been seeking. That's from Stride Towards Freedom, King's book about the bus boycott in Montgomery. When love is active, potent in this way, a force for not just individual but social change, love leaves all sentimentality behind. King asserts that the meaning of love is not to be confused with some sentimental outpouring. Love is something much deeper than emotional bosh. I hadn't run across the word before, so I had to look up bosh, which means something regarded as absurd nonsense. And so I'm going to try to use bosh in a sentence this week. But not in reference to love. To make clear how he defines love as other than bosh, King turns to the Bible and the fact that the Greek that the Bible is written in uses three different words that get translated as love, but that mean very different things. The one that King is interested in is agape, which he defines as understanding, redeeming, goodwill for all. It is an overflowing love, he says, which is purely spontaneous, unmotivated, groundless, and creative. It is not set in motion by any quality or function of its object. It's not set in motion by any quality or function of its object. It is the love of God operating in the human heart. Agape is non-judgmental. Agape is an entirely neighbor-regarding concern for others, he says, which discovers the neighbor in everyone it meets. King really pushes this non-judgmental concern for others hard. The word King uses to describe agape is disinterested. For example, if one loves an individual merely on account of their friendliness, he says, one loves them for the sake of the benefits to be gained from the friendship, rather than for the friend's own sake. Consequently, the best way to assure oneself that love is disinterested is to have love for the enemy neighbor from whom you can expect no good in return, but only hostility and persecution. So King is saying, if you really want to know if you are really practicing love, check in on yourself and see if you're just loving people that you feel some affection for or who are friendly to you. That's not enough. Are you loving your enemies? That is really loving. And that is really difficult. King argues that in the final analysis, he says, agape means a recognition of the fact that all life is interrelated. All humanity is involved in a single process, and all people are family. To the degree that I harm my sister, no matter what she is doing to me, to that extent, I am harming myself. We can resist the notion of beloved community because we know that as much as you get told to like someone, it is not going to happen. Feelings cannot be compelled. I will never love olives or cantaloupe. It ain't going to happen. But when we argue this, we are trying to box love into sentimentality and boshness. Belovedness isn't about a feeling. It's about how we treat one another. In so many ways, our world and so many of our communities are broken. And King's call to us is to love. King tells us, love, agape, is the only cement that can hold this broken community together. When I am commanded to love, I am commanded to restore community, to resist injustice, and to meet the needs of my neighbors. And agape love meets neighbors everywhere. It isn't that we have communities and we are being asked to love them. That's not how belovedness happens. I'm very fond of this congregation and I have a great affection for you all, but that isn't belovedness. Belovedness is about the transformation of ourselves, our community, and of society. It's also important to remember that love and achieving belovedness isn't just about other people. It's about a change in ourselves, too. I'm really glad that in all of his speeches and things, King didn't preach about agape community and instead talked about beloved community. Because I think that word can shape not only how we treat other people, but how we can treat ourselves, too. We can treat others as beloved. We have a sense of what that would mean to treat another as beloved. But we are also called to treat ourselves as beloved. And that can feel like a big thing. To treat yourself as beloved. Because the beloved community needs your transformation and not just the transformation of everybody else. We all have to transform together. We are all interrelated. That's what agape and belovedness teaches us. King's teacher Howard Thurman said, we become persons by an other than self reference, which is other persons. We become human in a human situation. The name for a human situation is beloved community. And the way there is through nonviolence and love. We are called to love. And I'm going to let Martin Luther King get the last word. He said this, and I say to you, I have also decided to stick to love. For I know that love is ultimately the only answer to humankind's problems. And I'm going to talk about it everywhere I go. I know it isn't popular to talk about it in some circles today. I'm not talking about emotional bosh when I talk about love. I'm talking about a strong, demanding love, and I have seen too much hate. I've seen too much hate on the faces of sheriffs in the South. I've seen hate on the faces of too many Klansmen and too many white citizens, counselors in the South to want to hate myself, because every time I see it, I know that it does something to their faces and their personalities, and I say to myself that hate is too great a burden to bear. I have decided to love. So may it be for all of us.